Mike, will you call the roll?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, just to be clear, we're calling open the regular board meeting for the Housing Authority of the City of Austin. We are also going to, Commissioner Carrington, open up the regular board meeting of Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, and we're also going to open up the regular board meeting for Austin Affordable PFC. The time is 12:06, and Commissioner Bailey?
Here.
Commissioner Carrington?
Present.
Commissioner Duncan Hall?
Present.
Commissioner Apostolo?
Present.
And Commissioner Ritchie?
Present.
We have a quorum, and all three board meetings are now open.
Okay, so we're officially called to order at 12:07 p.m. And then is there any citizens' communication?
I believe Zenobia Joseph might wish to give citizens' communication. Zenobia?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, board members. I'm Zenobia Joseph. Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make a comment as it relates to your October 15, 2020 board packet. I would specifically would like to comment on Project Connect. The resolution number was 02668. And what triggered my call today is that there was a property, specifically East Village, which is your property that will be on Palmer Lane, that went before Travis County Commissioner's Court this past Tuesday. And there is no transit there. So I think it's important to actually clarify what Project Connect actually covers. If you look at the document that I sent, I actually included the $7 billion estimate. The only thing that changed was that $100 million was added to that total. But you can see the line item analysis there. It's just the budget. What has me concerned is that when that property was being discussed, Commissioner Trevelyan, who represents this area, mentioned Techne Center pickup zone as the transportation and Metro Rapid. As it relates to Metro Rapid, I would just call to your attention June 8, 2020, Capital Area Metropolitan Planning Organization eliminated the three Northeast Metro Rapid lines. There were four total in Project Connect when it was $10 billion, but when that reduction came, those Metro Rapid lines went away. So there is no transit on Palmer Lane between Samsung and Apple. And so I would just ask you to keep that in mind as you are making decisions about where to put housing. That also impacts the area that's north of Dessau Road. There is online a schematic from Endeavor right at Palmer and Dessau, and it shows 5,500 apartment units in that area within a two-mile radius of Samsung. And there is no bus, and that is not even including all of the properties that you have in your portfolio. So when I mentioned that it's important to look at an overlay of the maps, not just from the Housing Authority of the City of Austin, but to juxtapose the properties from the Travis County and also those that are approved by the City of Austin so that you can see the concentration of poverty that will eventually emerge in that area. This is not a ding on your organization in particular. Each organization that I testify before looks at these properties in silos. So the staff on Tuesday actually gave commissioners a spreadsheet that lists all of the properties, but it did not include the Ventura at Palmer, for example. I will try to wrap up. My point in telling you this is Techne Center, if you know the area, is by Norman Elementary. It is nowhere near Palmer Lane. And so it was a disservice for Commissioner Trevelyan to say that Techne Center is going to serve the people on Palmer. And the Metro Rapid, as I mentioned, it was eliminated on Palmer, Decker to downtown, and Dessau. There was the bus line that was supposed to run to ACC Highland, which is the gold line. And the reason that these projects were eliminated was to fund $633 million towards I-35 expansion, the Central Express Capital Express Central project. And so I just share that with you. I just want to mention as well, as it relates specifically to the resolution, there was language that said it promises to connect the entire city. That is just not accurate. And what I want you to understand is that this was a biased resolution. but it's not just your resolution. On KAZI, there was biased information, and they only told the public about the positives, and that it was propaganda that played 550 times between April and November. And then there was another ad that specified that this was going to benefit everyone and that it actually included the transit-dependent riders, when, in fact, that was paid for by a political action committee that included the president of Houston, Tillotson, as their finance officer. And so it's deeply disturbing. I would just let you know that I recognize you mentioned the Hatch Act at one point. The Appropriations Act of 2020 prohibits use of public funds for propaganda, the public housing section, and I would just lastly say, please balance competing interests and to recognize the need to comply with Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. If you have any questions, I'll gladly answer them at this time.
Thank you for your assistance communication.
You're welcome.
Are there any other members of the public who wish to give citizens communication?
So let me just respond briefly to Ms. Joseph. One, let me just thank you for, one, sending the information. I just read it, your email that was forwarded to me, and I appreciate your advocacy, your diligence related to transportation and housing, especially as it relates to marginalized communities. I appreciate your comments. We will take them under advisement. I appreciate you also bearing with us and letting us know maybe the information we got was not fully complete. I appreciate your advocacy and your hard work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your comments.
Is there anyone else from the general public who would like to address the board at this time doing citizens communication? Hearing none, then we will close citizens communication, and we will go to the consent agenda. On the consent agenda, we have approval of the board minutes, a summary of the board minutes from the October 15th, 2020 meeting, and also a resolution, 2675, approval of the Board of Commissioners board meeting schedule for 2021. Before we take action, is there any member of the general public who is on the line who would wish to comment on those items before we take them up on their consent agenda? Hearing none, the chair will entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda as printed.
So move.
Aye.
Motion by Commissioner Carrington, seconded by Commissioner Apostolo. Is there any discussion? Hearing none. Is there any opposition? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
I would ask, we have a number of visitors on the call today who are interested in an item on the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation agenda dealing with Rosewood Courts. So I would ask that we go to the AAHC agenda and to item number 3 so that we can accommodate work schedules and be respectful of our guests today.
All right, we'll turn it over to Commissioner Carrington to chair that portion of the meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Gerber. Thank you, Chairman Ritchie. This is item 3 of the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation's agenda. The item that's coming before the board of AAHC today is to approve a resolution 00169 authorizing Austin Affordable Housing Corporation to execute any and all documents or take any action that's necessary and desirable to participate in the housing tax credit application for Pathways at Rosewood Courts. And I apologize, I think I should have first said, is there anyone from the public that would like to provide citizen communication on item number 3 for Austin Affordable Housing Corporation? OK, Okay.
Commissioner Carrington, I believe that there's a number of folks who would wish to make comment. If the staff could go first to lay out the issue, and then I think you'll hear from a variety of different partners and residents on this issue. I respectfully ask if Sylvia Blanco could take over at this point, or Anne Gass, to go and provide a presentation, which I think will then lead to the other comment.
Good question. Okay, thank you. So, Ms. Blanco or Ms. Gass, one or both?
Good afternoon, good afternoon Madam Chair. Good afternoon, commissioners, staff, and guests. Mm-hmm. I'm Sylvia Blanco, the Chief Operating Officer for the Housing Authority of the City of Austin. And I am excited to be presenting resolution number 169 for your consideration and approval. Board approval will allow us to proceed with the submission of a low-income housing tax credit application to the Texas Department of Housing and Community Affairs for the first phase of redevelopment of Pathways at Rosewood Courts. We are joined by several key external partners involved in this project today. And if I may, I'd like to introduce them to you at this time, and they can share a few quick remarks about their background. First, we are joined by Prentice Gary, president and founder of Carlton Companies, as well as Will Henderson, and I believe also Holland Gary. But Prentice, would you like to say a few quick words first?
Well, all I can say is we're very excited about being your partner on the transformation of the Chalmers properties. We've got one that's completed, and we've got several on their way. And at the end of the day, you will have almost 400 new units of affordable housing at the Chalmers properties. I mean, these properties have, as you all know, an incredible history, and the transformation they are going through, we are just excited and very pleased to be your partner on this transaction.
Thank you so much, Prentice, for those kind words. I'd like to turn it over to now introduce Phil Crisara, who's a vice president of Nelson Partners. Phil, would you like to say a few words?
Sure. I'm Phil Crisara with Nelson Partners. We are the architects for the project. We have been busy planning, and we have some design updates to share with you today. We're very, very excited about that. Matt Beaton has joined me. He's in one of these squares somewhere. We have enjoyed the process very much. We are heavily engaged and are very, very excited to be in a position to influence the future of Rosewood.
Thank you, Phil. Next, I would like to introduce Donna Carter, president of Carter Design Associates. Donna?
Thank you, Sylvia. I'm very pleased to be here today and will be part of the next phase and the next adventure for Rosewood Courts. But I'm pretty proud of having worked with the Housing Authority and been there kind of in this journey as we've come to the place both of having the historic district and knowing the areas that will be preserved, to be able to talk a little bit more about the history, not only of a particular place or piece of the site, but really the whole site and how that can permeate the development. And then obviously the excitement of being able to have new affordable units, and the part that one of the pieces that I'll be working on is actually the pathway, you know, the home ownership units. So that all of this is very exciting, and very exciting not only for the site, but for Austin. So I'm very happy to be here.
Thank you, Donna. Next, I would like to introduce Sharonda Robinson, who is President and CEO of Adiza Communications. Sharonda?
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you. I, too, share in the excitement of this amazing project. The cultural and historic legacy of Rosewood Courts is a story that we can help tell. And we're also very pleased to be part of a really a superior team that you put together, and as well as the team at the Housing Authority who we've been working with. So, you know, our role will be to support communications and community engagement and ensure that our residents remain actively involved and informed, and that we tell the story of this wonderful project. So thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Sharonda. And more importantly, we are joined by Rosewood Salina Resident Council President Alexis Henderson and Vice President Steve Wichard, who will also be sharing a few remarks during the presentation. But Alexis, would you like to say a few initial remarks right now?
I'm just happy to be here once again. It's my passion. This is my heart. So I'm just happy to have the opportunity to be here.
Thank you. How about you, Steve? Would you like to say a few initial remarks?
Well, I've been involved with this since day one, so I think it's 7 years. And I'm just happy to see the board working with us to move through so we can finally resolve this issue.
Thank you, Steve. I'd also like to just quickly acknowledge the critical work that's being done at the site on boots on the ground by numerous HACA team members who have assisted with resident outreach and engagement throughout this process. And that includes property manager Sandra Winston, family outreach specialist Brandy Pitts, and her director Leilani Lim Villegas, RAD coordinator Angie Town, who is going to be my navigator during this presentation, interim CFO Ann Gass, and last but not least, absolutely, resident protection project manager Ms. Tiffany Middleton. So it has definitely been a team effort. It's been a passion project for so many of us here at the Housing Authority, and we're just excited to be here at this juncture this afternoon. And with that, we're going to go ahead and share a few slides, and Phil will also be tag-teaming with me when we get to a few exciting renderings that are hot off the presses. So, Andrew, you want to go ahead and go on to the next slide? So, commissioners, I just wanted to share with you sort of a general timeline that we are projecting to reach certain milestones, including the submission of the pre-application for the tax credits come January of next year. We will be reaching out to City Council for their resolution of support on this project, and we do anticipate that support. We've had an opportunity to meet with Council Member Natasha Harper Madison's office. And in fact, Lauren Hartnett with her office actually did an in-person tour of a couple of vacant units and actually got to see the site itself. And again, is very enthusiastic about this project moving forward. Then in February, February 4th to be exact, we will be submitting the application for the at-risk set-aside in tax credits, which should be totaling $20 million in credits. And let's see, I think we have it in here twice, but the full application will go in, I believe, in March, in early March. And please interject if I'm incorrect on that, Will.
No, that's correct.
Great. And then if all goes well, fingers crossed, we will get the actual announcement of the awards in July of 2021, and then we will look towards doing the temporary relocation of our Rosewood Courts residents in early 2022. We do hope to time that to where we will be able to take advantage of Chalmers West coming online around that time period, so folks don't have to go very far at all for some temporary relocation. They will have, several options to choose from in terms of going to a HACA property or utilize a Section 8 voucher or hopefully go to Chalmers West. So we will be working very, very closely in meeting every household's needs because every household has individual needs, and it's not definitely not going to be a cookie-cutter approach. And then by end of 2023, we anticipate that the first phase of redevelopment of Rosewood will be complete and our residents will have the first right to return to the newly redeveloped phase one of Rosewood Courts. Angie, next slide.
Sylvia, I have a question.
Yes.
How many families, how many residents do we have over there now?
Yes, ma'am. We have 124 current units, so 124 families.
Okay. Thank you.
And upon completion of the first phase, we'll actually have 164 units created. So every single resident, if they wish to return upon the completion of the first phase, can return, which is very exciting.
Yes.
Just a very quick recap. Over the years, you have seen that RAD equals PIC, protections, improvements, and choice. And this is no different with our Rosewood families. Again, they have the first right to return. And during relocation, we will definitely ensure that they, during that temporary relocation stay, that they have access to a unit that is just as good, if not better, than what they have currently at Rosewood. In terms of improvements, obviously the big improvement is a brand new property, a brand new modern energy efficient units that will have central air, dishwasher, microwave, you know, all of the modern basic amenities that most of us take for granted these days. And choice, as mentioned, we will ensure that our residents continue to be fully plugged in and involved in the stakeholder process. We anticipate, and Phil, I'm putting you on the spot here, but we're envisioning having the community room at Salina serve as a showroom, if you will, so that residents can come in and touch and feel the different finishes and the different color choices as they come in to pay rent, as they come in to meet with the property manager. I'm excited about that capability of being able to show them and help them to envision the future of Rosewood. Next slide, please. So just a quick recap. As mentioned, we currently do have 124 units at Rosewood, and that equates to about 105 families with children. We have 95 children there, 34 seniors, 62 and over, and 78 persons with disabilities. And upon completion of not only the first phase, but also upon completion of the restoration of the 8 historic buildings, we anticipate having 191 rental units. At least half of those will be family units, meaning 2 bedrooms and through 4 bedrooms. And of course, that means that we'll be able to serve more families with children, and that in turn will help to increase enrollment at our wonderful neighborhood schools like Blackshear and Keeling Middle Schools. And of course, there's going to be a brand spanking new high school just a stone's throw away. So that's very exciting. We're also doubling the number of accessible units that is even required. Typically it's 5%, we're doubling that to 10%, so we'll be able to serve more persons with disabilities as well. Next slide, Angie. And here, I would like to turn it over to Phil Crisera with Nelson Partners. Again, these are hot off the presses. Alexis and Steve, you're getting a sneak peek at these as well, because no one has seen them. You'll be the first to see these, so I hope you're going to be just as excited as we have been in seeing these great renderings. So, Phil, I'm going to have you take it from here.
Great. Sylvia, thank you. We are very excited to share these new images. The design process is moving along very, very well, and, you know, it's important for all of you to understand that our appreciation and respect for the history and the history of the built environment on this site just continues to inspire us, and we are doing all we can to make sure that this is as fantastic as it can possibly be. Our new buildings and the parks that we're going to build here very much will take a supporting role to the historic buildings and their preservation and the new park that Donna Carter is going to be helping us with, along with other areas. So there's not a lot of ego in this design process. There's just a significant amount of respect for us to touch lightly and do the right thing for Rosewood. So that said, let's take a look. We have four renderings to share with you. First, I'm going to get you oriented. Here is the site plan. I'll remind you that the eight orange rectangles are the historic buildings that will be preserved. Thank you, Angie, for pointing those out. The series of blue buildings from Rosewood Avenue up the hill, building A, B, and C, are the new constructed multifamily buildings, all of those four stories tall. And we'll have a look at those and a little bit of the landscape environment around those. And for a future meeting, Donna Carter is going to be providing design for the yellow buildings that you see to the right, and those are the home ownership buildings, a very, very exciting and important component to the total of Rosewood Courts. So with these funny little red images, we have a 1, 2, 3, and a 4. 1, 2, 3, we're going to look at those renderings first. And this is a glimpse at the preserved historic building and a circulation spine that will be fully accessible and will connect us from a beautiful new public park down at Rosewood Avenue. That's that lime green area. And this circulation that will move up through the site that will provide access for all the residents and those visiting both for the new construction and the preserved buildings. So let's go ahead and move forward. We're going to take a look at number one. This is a view from the right. We're looking at the preserved historic building. And I just want you to take a minute and look at how beautiful that building is. That is what was initially built before we put pitched roofs on it and painted and did all those kinds of crazy things. These original buildings are really quite beautiful. We have paid great attention to these. We're just going to take a minute and look to the right. You know, the scale, the form, the materiality, the windows and doors and the generous daylight that, that is afforded by those overhangs. There is just a beautiful amount of restraint in the design of these buildings that we hope you'll see the influence in the new buildings that we're designing. What you see here as we look east, this is Building B. It's a four-story building. For each of the historic buildings that we are next to, there is a generous exterior patio area that's covered. That you can see in it with those steel columns beyond the historic building. The brick, it'll be similar. It won't be identical, but a complementary brick is very purposely kept low and kept at one story, again, to respect the scale of the historic buildings. And if you look at the new windows, they are very much the identical proportion of the old windows. There'll be a different window type, but very much the same size and the same proportions in terms of the general operation of the windows themselves. The materials above the brick is a hardy siding that will be a relaxed kind of neutral gray. This is very much on purpose because we don't want to be the story. We want to be, as I said earlier, a supportive role and a phenomenal backdrop for the celebration of these beautiful historic buildings. So this is the first look. You can tell we're looking up the hill. You'll see that the sidewalk to the left, coming to the left portion of the rendering, is a 2% ramp that will provide full accessibility as we navigate the hillside. Angie, let's go to the second view. We're going to go up the hill a little bit. Here is a view just on the other side of that historic building to the left, and we are looking at the courtyard between two of the new buildings. This is between Building B and C. We are about midway or maybe two-thirds up the hill at this point. You can see some landscaping and some places for people to rest and enjoy the shade of the beautiful live oak trees that we are preserving. And we believe that the courtyard that you see between the new buildings will be a phenomenal semi-public space and private space where kids are going to be able to play within eyesight of their moms and dads outside of patios. We're very, very excited about some of these found smaller landscape areas for the residents. So that's, again, you can see one story of brick with the hardy above, some really, really nice generous balconies. The balconies are 6 feet deep, so tables and chairs and legitimate coffee in the morning or, you know, dinner at night, you can sit out there and enjoy what's happening outside in the community. So that's a look between the buildings. And I think we have one more view that's up the hill. That would be at our highest point, looking now down the hill. We're actually in that high parking lot looking down. And again, another historic building to the left, and more of this circulation pedestrian spine down the middle, and our new building to the right. This is a different type of look of the terraced shaded patio area that is kind of counterpoint to the historic buildings. Again, we're trying to maintain and develop a nice sense of scale and the ability to be outdoors and enjoy trees and the historic buildings and frankly, your friends and neighbors passing by. So these are the three looks up the hill. We do have one more look that is toward the corner of Rosewood Avenue. And to the right, I will say to Donna Carter, this is a respectful white canvas for what's going to be a spectacular park on the hard corner of Rosewood Avenue, and will be have a built edge of our building A down at the street. So all of this green area that we see that heads up the hill, there's a significant amount of programming and design work that Donna Carter is going to be heading up. And we're very excited to see our design team expand and work here. So this is a placeholder. I promise you, without putting any pressure on Donna, that the next time you see this is going to be a lot better. But nonetheless, there is a really, really fantastic park that will be offered to the entire community. The building that we see to the left, this is very early. This one, the ink really is drying on. But we believe that there's maybe a visitor center or something of that sort that will accompany the park, that will be a great place for the ability to share some of the rich history of the site. And so we see that in that first floor glass area. This building, because it's down at the street edge and has all the excitement of traffic on Rosewood Avenue and all that comes with that, there's a little more brick than the buildings that we had up the hill. So this building has about three stories of brick. With a change in material up on the fourth floor. So this building will be a little more robust and we'll ask a little more of it in terms of its interaction with the public. So this is where we are. We're very, very excited about the direction that we're heading in. It is early and we are getting very, very good guidance from the Housing Authority team and Carlton Companies. And we're anxious to be back sometime to show you more, but this is where we are right now. Thank you for your time.
Great. Thank you so much, Phil. And I wanted to just share this.
I've got a couple of questions, just curious questions for Phil. On your teams, are you going to have separate teams for the historic preservation part and the rest of the, and then another team for the regular? I know just when people come in and do a lot of work on historic houses and buildings, they need people kind of artisans almost that kind of know what they're doing.
Right.
I don't know that you need that on these buildings, but I'm just curious how are you going to do that?
Well, here's the answer. We need it, okay? We are very proud of what we do, but we are not preservation architects. And Urban Foundry, I don't think David's with us today, but David Carroll, he's contracted through us, but he will be providing the preservation effort soup to nuts on the 8 existing buildings. And so we appreciate the expertise, and we were very quick in working with the Housing Authority and Carlton Companies to say, you know, we need to go find the right team to get this done right. So, yes, it is a separate team. They are under our umbrella as we collaborate together. But there is absolute expertise to take the light touch on those buildings.
Okay. Thanks.
And lastly here, commissioners, I just wanted to leave you with this visual. As you recall, back in 2018, our Rosewood residents, and in fact our Santa Rita and Chalmers residents, really came out in support and advocating for the preservation of the 8 buildings that we have today. And Alexis and Steve really were, leaders and continue to be leaders in that effort. And just wanted to, give them the opportunity to say a few final words as before taking up the action item. Alexis, would you like to say a few words?
Yes, I would. Because I always just want people to just remember, like, this is something to me that's like making in the history. Because I always believe that the only way that we can all be great is if we reach down to our smallest man, our smallest and our weakest families, and reach up and grab them with us so we can be stronger. You know, it's just, I don't know, when I get ready to talk, there's just so many things that I want to say, and it keeps coming to my mind, but it's just like the love and the compassion and the history also that I've learned about this neighborhood, and just the fact that people deserve to have amenities. They deserve to have just regular things that other people have. So that way, when we do come to Rosewood, when we do come home, when people ask us, where do you stay? Oh, yes, I stay in Rosewood. You know, have that pride. Our city is as strong as we can make it. And I think this is just, it's dear to my heart. And I love to work hard on this. I will always be here because this is just something that I believe that really, really needs to be done. Something that's past needing to be done. And I love it. I love you guys. And that's it.
Thank you, Alexis. Steve, would you like to say a few final words?
Yes. The one thing is, we've been working on this, like I said, for 7 years. We've gone through fighting, sounds horrible, with the community to get something done, to finally getting the community behind us, except for one or two people. And so we want to go from saying we live in the projects to saying we live in Rosewood and having somewhere not only for us but for the families that are here and for families that move in that we're proud to show, and where it's nice enough where we can have company if we ever get through COVID and be proud of where we live. And I appreciate all the work from all the partners and the other residents and as we work to get this finished.
Thank you very much, Steve and Alexis, for those inspirational words. And again, this we couldn't be at this juncture and this point without your leadership, without your passion, and without your hard work. So with that, commissioners, I do sincerely ask for your approval of Resolution 169 so that we can proceed with the submission of the tax credit application to TDHCA.
Is there a motion?
So moved.
Thank you, Mr. Bailey. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Chairman Ritchie, and is there any further discussion on Resolution 00169 to place the tax credit application to TDHCA for 9% tax credits for Rosewood? Okay, no further discussion. Then all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. The motion passes. Thank
Commissioners, congratulations. This is a huge accomplishment and gets the ball rolling on what's been our most challenging redevelopment and the one that has generated the most interest and excitement for so many of us. This is a long time coming, and I want to give a special shout out to Sylvia and Tiffany and Sandra Winston and members of the HACA staff who have been really felt this project in their bones, and this is a really important thing, and so I thank all of them for their leadership, and Angie and Ann and others on the call. And we're really pleased to be in partnership with Carlton and with Nelson Partners and with Donna and Urban Foundry and others. And we're going to get this done. It's exciting. Thank you again.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Chairman Ritchie, if I can jump quickly back to and ask for your forbearance on the regular board meeting agenda. Item number 7 is one of those updates that I told you we did need to cover. Lisa Garcia would like to just give a quick briefing on the Housing Choice Voucher and the rental assistance programs. And the reason for this briefing is really to lead to a sense from you all. There's not an action to be taken today, but there is a need to get a sort of sense from you all about a staff call that we're going to make regarding the project basing of some vouchers. So, Lisa, if you can jump into that very, very quickly on item number 7, and then we'd love to just get board feedback.
Great. Good afternoon, commissioners, staff, and guests. Thank you, Mike, for that introduction. So I'm here just to visit with you regarding the current Housing Choice Voucher or current funding status, as well as the desire to consider project-basing some additional Housing Choice Vouchers. This past year, it's been difficult, of course, with COVID-19 pandemic. However, we have been successful in receiving additional PAP funds. We've received about $3.4 million in additional HAP funds for the voucher program. So right now we're in pretty good shape in terms of the overall funding for the program this year. We've had a lot of various partners in the community that serve the homeless population, as well as including veterans that are experiencing homelessness, that have really reached out to the Housing Authority to ask us to consider project-basing some additional tenant-based vouchers. Under the program rules for the Housing Choice Voucher Program, we can project-base up to 20% of the vouchers we have, which is 1,233 vouchers. Right now, in the pipeline, we have a total of 183 vouchers that will be project-based. But some of those are for RAD conversions. So out of that mix, only 33 of those would go towards that 20% cap. So we're definitely well in terms of the ability for us to project-base additional vouchers. We certainly may. Within the HCD admin plan, we indicate that we'd be willing to consider project-basing up to 400 tenant-based vouchers. So with project-basing of vouchers, that allows for additional affordable housing development, primarily to serve those most vulnerable, those experiencing homelessness, veterans experiencing homelessness. And so what we'd like to do is put out a request for proposal to project base 100 additional tenant-based vouchers and 100 VASH vouchers. We also just recently received an additional award of 112 VASH vouchers. So we have the ability, we have plenty of VASH vouchers right now. I visited with a representative from the VA, Andrew Miller, to ask if he thought it might be a good idea to secure some units for some of the veterans. We're up to like 638 tenant-based VASH vouchers right now. And one of the difficulties with veterans experiencing homelessness that they have when they receive a voucher is finding an affordable unit because they might have some barriers to get into housing. So it's not asking for a motion. We're just asking if what your thoughts are on us putting out the request for proposal. We would once we do that and advertise it, we would come back to you before we made any decisions or awards for project basing any of these vouchers. We're just right now wanting to just get your thoughts on us advertising the request for proposal. I'll open it up now for any questions.
Lisa, earlier you mentioned we got some additional housing choice vouchers. I don't think you said VASH, but we got some additional vouchers.
We did receive I'm sorry, go ahead. It was additional funds.
Funds, okay.
Yes,
okay.
Yes, yeah.
So will those carry forward? I mean, is this a one-time, one-shot deal, or will we continue to get these dollars so that if we do turn these into vouchers, then are we going to continue to have resources to be able to help the families and the individuals?
Right. So in terms of that, it is a one-time thing that we'll have the money available. We'll spend it down through the end of next year, December. Right now, with the funds that we're receiving and the number of vouchers that are allocated, with the funds that we were receiving, we're leasing about 1,000 families less than what we're able to with the money that we receive. That's just because of the increased rental costs. So from year to year, when you project-based vouchers, you just have to make sure that you don't issue additional vouchers. You've got to support those projects. So that's just something we would look at on each year, because each year we'll receive a different, HUD appropriates a different amount of money. So we'll just make sure that we're always in a position to be able to support, whatever project-based vouchers we'll have. It just takes it away from allowing a certain number of families to use the tenant-based vouchers. However, one of the things with the project-based vouchers, after 1 year that they've lived in a particular project that's project-based, they can request to have a tenant-based voucher. So really, in terms of the individual, it doesn't limit them forever and ever. It just makes available some additional units that will indeed accept, families or individuals that are, experiencing homelessness. So it creates additional inventory in the community so that families that have vouchers can more successfully be able to locate a place.
And Commissioners, I would just chime in that, as you know, last year we joined in the opening of the Terrace at Oak Springs, a property done by Integral Care, our MHMR agency here in Austin. That property had 50 units, 25 of which you all provided VASH vouchers for, and 25 of which received housing choice vouchers, which you all approved. That project has been phenomenally successful and a great example of a partnership between us and Integral Care. We're in every unit at that property, and we would not have been able, it's a very service-rich property. We wouldn't have been able to do that. They wouldn't have been able to do it were it not for the ongoing subsidy that the project-based voucher provides. So what the community's request has been really from those serving the homeless, those who, seeing the acute needs in homelessness and the acute needs in other housing types here in our city, we have been approached by advocates over many years, and we've held, Lisa's done a great job holding firm on the tenant basing of the program, giving the tenant the ultimate choice. But we did go and make the decision to allow a little bit of a crack into that several years ago, knowing that there was a need for additional housing stock and for certain categories of folks, the homeless, persons with disabilities, and other special populations, unless we project-based, we're really not going to get the housing inventory that we need. So this opportunity to project-based, given these new resources, is really a, once in a several years kind of thing. We may see new resources if there's another stimulus bill, and we'll come back and revisit if we need to. But at this point, given Lisa's very conservative leadership of the program, we think that 100 VASH and 100 housing choice vouchers, could really make an impact. It would enable us to do 4 more of those Terrace at Oak Spring-like projects. And we will be, if you all concur, we can get the RFP out for those projects We would be able to bring them back to you probably in January or February, maybe as late as March, for your approval. You all will need to approve each of the allocations of vouchers for any specific project that we enter, of course, because it's a major subsidy. It's a major amount of money we're talking about. But if we were to get with your concurrence, general sense of go ahead and issue the RFP, we will be able to help a number of projects that might wish to compete for tax credits or for private activity bond dollars and resources that they'll have another tool to leverage. And so the timing is somewhat in play here.
Do we have projects in mind that we would use these 100 and 100 project-based vouchers for?
None specifically. We've heard from foundation communities as they work to do more in SRO-type housing for single-room occupancy housing for transitioning homeless. We've heard from them about their interest in serving more homeless vets. We've heard a lot from Caritas about their interest in serving different homeless and homeless vet populations. There's other players here in the city, but no, in fact, it would be against HUD guidelines for us to sort of game the field, if you will. But there are well-known actors who we know have projects. This will actually compel them, and the way Lisa will write the RFP will compel them to think about city objectives regarding homelessness and supportive housing, our own objectives regarding homelessness and supportive housing, and likely force some of those players to think about just how deeply they can serve folks. And that's a good thing. We want folks to dig a little deeper in return for what's a pretty substantial amount of subsidy. Is that right, Lisa?
Yep, correct. That's very correct. And more than likely what will happen if there's some folks that step forward with an interest, of course, that's going to create additional affordable housing as well. There's going to be a tax credit, so there might be a portion that they'll project-based, but then there'll be additional units that could be brought to the community to increase affordable housing opportunities overall.
And they're hard vouchers to use. When we put out the project-based voucher opportunity for VASH several years ago, we were able to place the most at the Terrace at Oak Springs. Our partners at Ashoda Housing, they were able to use, I think, 12 at the Elysium and maybe 12 somewhere else. There were a couple of folks who applied, but we didn't feel that they didn't have the capacity. And in one case, when they felt like they dove more into it, they felt like they couldn't be successful at it. So it's a changing of operating culture at some of the properties as well. And that's what we need people to do. We need these players to think about what else they can do to create services and other things for transitioning homeless. That's a different population and a different level of need. And it really does deserve the kind of subsidy we're talking about. And we're really one of the few in this community, other than Travis County, which has a very small program that can actually do this kind of work.
Lisa, who will be bidding on the RFP?
At this point, I'm not sure it'll be a public.
I don't mean specifically, but what type of companies?
It's gonna have to be a company that specifically is going to serve the homeless or veterans that are experiencing homelessness. That's going to be one of the requirements in it, and that's how we have it drawn up in our admin plan. And that preference in consideration will be given to those that have that in mind. So it's going to be an affordable housing type of developer that wants to expand opportunities to serve the homeless.
Commissioner Bailey, I think you'll see probably a lot of nonprofits as well. I think you'll see Caritas. I think you'll see foundation communities. You might see the Safe Alliance, the domestic violence program here in town that might apply. You might see Integral Care come back for another project. They may do it in partnership with others, but I think you'll see some of those partners, some of them come forward.
And then if they get the award, then their job will be to go out and find people who qualify for these vouchers?
Actually, if they get the award, you know, they have to have a development plan in mind. And then once the property is completed, more than likely, if it's a VASH, those get referred directly from the VA. So whatever the number of VASH vouchers we have, there'll be a certain number that when they get the VASH voucher, they'll, you know, let them know of the opportunity at these various properties. And then with regards to the regular tenant base, those are going to be coming off the regular tenant base wait list. So what we need to do first is provide an opportunity for everybody that's on our current tenant base wait list to know of this opportunity. So they could choose to take their voucher and go search, or they could look at moving into one of these properties, whichever ones we have that are project basing vouchers. If at the point we go through the whole wait list and there's nobody interested, then they could do direct referrals to the wait list of eligible applicants.
Okay. I sort of understand.
But yeah, I mean, in terms of the folks that are on our wait list will get the
answer. I think the answer. Right. So it's taking a little bit away from our tenant-based program, but not in ways that really significantly hurt us. You know, it's a resource question. We don't have enough of this resource in this community. And so it's how do you most effectively utilize it? And we've made the decision, you all have made the decision, that a tenant-based program is the most appropriate route. But we also know that we can't get certain types of housing for certain special populations, the homeless principally, on the ground unless we or deeply subsidized units for persons with disabilities on the ground. Without this type of subsidy, the tax credit program doesn't do it enough. That program is really geared for folks at about 60%. Our fund is, you know, our vouchers will serve folks at 30% below. So the layering of subsidy really enables us to serve more. We can't do a lot, but we did build into our plan some years ago to be able to do up to what, 400, Lisa?
Yes, correct.
So this really is, we're just, by adding these 200 vouchers, this will take us up to, what, 275 or 300 of what we envisioned of 400 all those years ago?
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah, so I think I raised these questions before about worrying about our regular folks getting set aside by these specific folks, but y'all convinced me that it was it served two or three good purposes, and I'm fine. I just trying to make sure I understood the mechanics of it.
And from a mechanics standpoint, Lisa will also have a long runway because the project basing won't happen until it's actually built, most likely, unless it's a new acquisition. But assuming that that's newly built, she's going to have, you know, at least two and a half years. To sort of map out her allocation of resources schedules, and so, you know, she gets a good amount of running room in management of the program.
Correct.
Okay.
So, absent any objection, we're going to go ahead and at the staff level, we believe we have the authority to go and issue a request for proposals, and we will. Proceed to do that. And I'm sorry, Commissioner Carrington, I just noticed you're waving.
No, not at you, Mike. Not at you. Sorry.
No worries. And we will bring
my electrician just showed up.
Oh, good. Keep the electricity going to the computer. So we will be bringing deals back to you as appropriate, but most likely expect to see some things in that January, February, March timeframe. And we're excited to see what the community will bring forward. And again, we'll be working closely with the city so that there's a lot of tie-in between city objectives, HACA objectives, and making sure that we're all synced up, which is really important.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence, if we could go back to the next project that has visitors with us today is Turtle Creek. And so if Commissioner Carrington, in her role as chair of Austin Affordable PFC, and we can, I think the whole agenda is Turtle Creek. So maybe we can knock out the PFC agenda, and then we need to take up Turtle Creek on the AAHC agenda and then Turtle Creek on the HACA agenda, Commissioner Carrington.
Thank you, Mr. Gerber. So the next item is the Austin Affordable PFC, and that is a tab in your book toward the back, AAPFC. We have opened the meeting, so I'll call. Do I need to call the meeting to order, Mr. Gerber?
It's already been called to order.
Been called to order. Then the next item on the agenda is a citizen's communication for the PFC. So do we have anyone who has signed up to speak on this item? Okay. Hearing none, then we will move on to the consent item for the PFC, which is the board minutes for the meeting held on September the 17th, 2020. So it's a consent item. Any comments on this? All those in favor? Well, is there a motion to approve the consent item?
I would make a motion
to
approve item number one on the consent agenda.
Thank you, Chairman Ritchie. And I think, Mary, I heard you as a second.
Yes.
Okay. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Thank you. Then the one action item for the Austin Affordable Public Facilities Corporation, PFC, is item number two. And this is discussion and possible action on resolution 00079, authorizing the issuance, sale, and delivery of multifamily housing revenue bonds and refunding note for the bridge at Turtle Creek, approving the form and substance of and authorizing the execution and delivery of documents and instruments necessary to carry out the financing of such multifamily residential rental development project and containing other provisions relating to the subject. So at this point, this item is presented by Suzanne Swartner. Suzanne, so this is yours.
Madam Chair, Commissioners, Mr. Gerber, staff, and guests, it is my pleasure to present you Bridge at Turtle Creek. This is the second development we will be doing with Journeyman Group, which is also known as JCI Residential. This project is located off of South First Street, just south of Sassany and north of William Cannon, almost in between, halfway in between. We will be doing a 4% tax credit deal with bonds, and we will be utilizing the income averaging, which means that we will serve residents between 50% area median income and 70% area median income. We are doing this so that we can get a deeper affordability in this project. Also, when you do projects that are limited, that are 100% at 60% AMI, if a tenant comes or a potential tenant comes in and applies and they are $1 over that 60% AMI, they cannot qualify for that project. So this opens up a whole new base for tenant base for us those people between 60% and 70% can qualify. So we're excited about it. The market study has shown that, you know, there is demand for that income level. This project is located in the city of Austin. You have seen this project two times before, back in March for our inducement resolution for the bonds and our tax credit application resolution. Also last month for the public hearing. We did have a few people from the neighborhood speak out about the project. After the board meeting last month, our developer partners, who we do have several on the line that I will introduce in a minute, they did reach out via email and copied me to everyone who had shown up at the board meeting last month. Only one person responded, so we decided to do a Zoom meeting then, and only two people showed up to the Zoom meeting. And basically their concerns were just, you know, having construction in that neighborhood. So one of them had some bad experience because a developer had built like three units behind their house. And so the great partner that we have at Journeyman, they gave him the homeowners their information so that they can contact them, you know, if they have any questions throughout the whole process of building this. We have 307 units. We have a mix of efficiencies, one bedrooms and two bedrooms. And Commissioner Duncan Hall, you did ask when we have the different AMI levels that we're serving for us to break out those unit levels at the different AMI levels. So we've got 62 efficiencies at 50% AMI, 72 at 60%, 96 bedroom, one bedrooms at 60%, 15 two bedrooms and one bath at 60%, and then the rest of the two bedrooms at 70% AMI. So those are the levels we will have to abide by once we have this constructed. The lender is going to be KeyBank, and we have worked with them several other times. And then the equity provider is Enterprise, and we've also worked with them before. They're really good. Both are really good partners of ours. And as with all Austin affordable developments, we will accept housing choice vouchers. And I would be glad, I wanted to introduce, we have from Journeyman Group, we have Sam Kumar, Ross Hamilton, Kurt Gall, and Nick LaDuca on the line if anybody has any questions for them.
Anybody have any questions for the members of the development team? Or for Suzanne.
Commissioners, I would just add that how pleased we are to have Sam here in particular. Sam's been a leader in our community for a long time and has sat on different boards dealing with issues around homelessness, and it's been a pleasure and joy to work with him and the JCI team on other deals, the one on Powell Lane and now this project as well. So thank you, Sam, and thanks for your team's work with us.
Thank you, Mr. Gerber. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Commissioners. We really enjoy working with your team, and we are honored, and we are glad to partner with you all on another project. This will be a great project also, very close to town. So we are happy, and it is our honor to partner with you all.
Thank you.
And Sam, I would just add, thanks for jumping in with the residents to address those community concerns as well. We always want to be talking to the neighborhood, and those are good folks. And obviously, the pandemic's made it difficult to be in touch, and I'm glad. Thank you again for reaching out as quickly as you did.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it, and that's the least we could do. So residents were very understanding, so thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, then I would ask for a motion
to approve resolution 00079. And it
aye,
is
for so the
okay. Thank you, Mary. Is there a second? Okay, Chuck, thank you. I see your hand. Yep. Any further discussion? Oh, Chuck, was that a question?
No, I was seconding.
Oh, okay, thank you. Your little square about that big.
No, I know.
So if there's no further discussion, then I'll ask for a vote to approve 0079. The Bridges at Turtle Creek. All in favor? Aye. Okay.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any opposed? Okay. Thank you all very much, and go forth, staff, and let's see if we can get this one done.
Commissioner Carrington, there is no need for an executive session, and I think we can go ahead and adjourn the PFC meeting.
Okay. I hear a motion to adjourn the PFC meeting.
So moved.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Second. Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Thank you. The Austin Affordable PFC is adjourned at 1:17 on November 19th.
Madam Chair, we would respectfully ask that you go to the AAHC agenda and take up Turtle Creek, which is item 2.
Okay. So backing up. Mr. Gerber, shouldn't we go ahead and ask for citizen communication and do the consent item? Before
yes,
we go to the action item?
Sounds good.
Correct? Okay. So any citizen communication on the meeting for the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation for the item before us? Actually, there's several items before us, but Mr. Gerber, you want us just to take up item 2 right now? Is that
yes,
correct?
Ma'am, please. Uh-huh.
Okay. Any citizen communication on item 2, which is the resolution 0170 for the bridges at Turtle Creek? Any citizen communication? Okay, hearing none, then I'd like to move on to the consent item, which was approved the board minutes of the meeting held on October the 15th, 2020. Do I hear a motion to approve? Thank you, Chuck. Second?
Second.
Thank you, Carl. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Thank you all. Then the first item we will take up is item number 2, which is resolution 00170 related to actions for the financing for the bridge at Turtle Creek. As typical, there are 4 actions you will be approving. Facilitate the development of the bridge at Turtle Creek. Second is to cause AAHC's wholly owned subsidiary, limited liability company, to execute, deliver, and perform our obligations of the general partner under the partnership agreement. Cause the partnership to enter into development financing for the project and cause AAHC and or the general partner to execute any and all documents that are necessary to consummate the transaction. So that's the action item that is before you today. And Suzanne, are you? Yes, Suzanne's on this one too.
And this one is Turtle Creek, which we just presented for the PFC. If you have any questions, I did want to note, last month I did have the address as 735 Turtle Creek. Due to the city changed the address because we will have one entrance from South First Street. So during the permitting process, they asked us to change the address. So now it's actually South First Street. But if anybody has any questions, I would be happy to answer.
Any questions for Suzanne? Okay, if not, do I hear a motion that we approve resolution 00170?
So moved.
Second.
Thank you, Chuck. Second was Carl?
Yes.
Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any opposed? Okay, then resolution 00170 passes. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Where do you want us to go now?
I'd like to go back to the HACA agenda and finish Turtle Creek, which is item number 3.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Carl, this would be you then, I think.
Yes, so we will take up item number 3, which is resolution number 2678, to approve the resolution of the Austin Affordable PFC, Inc., providing for the issuance of its multifamily housing revenue bonds and refunding notes for the bridge at Turtle Creek Apartments, Series 2020, and to take such actions necessary or convenient to facilitate the development of bridge at Turtle Creek Apartments. We've heard the presentation and about in the background and the process. The chair at this time will entertain a motion to approve resolution number 2678.
So
moved. That's a motion by Commissioner Harrington, seconded by Commissioner Apostolo. Is there any further discussion? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, I would suggest to the board that we go back to Commissioner Carrington in her role as chair and that we finish the AAHC agenda.
Okay, Dave.
Okay. Moving to Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. Item number 3 on the action items. This is discussion possible action on resolution 00169, authorizing
Commissioner Carrington, I'm sorry to interrupt. We actually covered that item at the very beginning. We've been hopping around a little bit, so we'll actually start on item 4.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Sorry about that. 00171 then, by the Board of AAHC to execute documents, take any action that's necessary or desirable to, number 1, facilitate the acquisition and development of Urban East Apartments Phase 1, Urban East Apartments Phase 2, let's see. And Suzanne, is this you or is this Ron? Ron, this is you on resolution 00169 related to, Urban East Phase 1 and Urban East Phase 2. So, Suzanne, this it looks like it's you again.
It's me again. Madam Chair, Commissioners, Mr. Gerber, staff, and guests, I have the pleasure of presenting another project. This one is really exciting to us. It's a new partnership with River City Capital Partnership. I did put their bios kind of in the summary, so I won't go over those. And we also have a third partner on this, LDG Multifamily. AHC and LDG will have no guarantees on this project. River City Capital will hold all of those. This is going to be a structure that's similar to Ron's acquisition projects. We'll have 50% of the units serving tenants below 80% area median family income and 50% of the units serving tenants above 80% area median family income. This is located off of Riverside Drive. It is on Riverside between Montopolis and Vargas. So it's a very, very nice area. I know that we did talk about the transformation of Riverside in previous meetings. This was why this was such an attractive deal. This is an empty lot that we'll be building on, so we won't have to worry about relocating any tenants or anything. This is located in an opportunity zone, which basically means those developers, investors that do pay taxes, this does give them a tax break when they invest in opportunity zones. It's kind of a complicated thing. It doesn't really affect Austin Affordable, but it is a very attractive location for equity providers and developers because they are able to take some tax breaks on that. River City Capital owns the land right now. What we anticipate is that we are going to develop it in two phases. Today, we are only asking you to approve phase one. Instead of going back to the city to replat to separate the two phases on this land, what we're going to do, and it's pretty common that people do this, we're going to do a condo regime which has two units, and this is a condo regime to the land. So the first unit will go with phase one, and the second one will go with phase two. HACA will actually own both units of the condo regime because they will own the land. We will ground lease the one unit to the partnership of phase one, and we'll ground lease the other unit to phase two. We're not obligated to do a phase two. That was one of the things I was adamant about, that we don't know with COVID, we don't know with the election or what's going to be happening in the next year or two. So when we're ready to look at phase two, then we'll come back to y'all. But we'll have a lot of homework to do. We want to do market studies. We want to see how the demand is, what's going on in Riverside before we'll commit to doing a phase two. But today, for phase one, we're doing 381 units. We have a breakdown between studios, one bedroom, one bath, two bedroom, two bath, and three bedroom, two bath. Another thing that's interesting is the bond that passed just a couple of weeks ago that's to do with the transit, the light rail. It looks like that there will be a light rail stop on Montopolis and Riverside. So once that's built, we will have a stop right in front of our apartments. So that's always a good thing. Our equity partner is Battery Global Advisors, and they are based in RCC, River City Capital will also be putting equity in. Battery Global Advisors is based out of Boston. They deal with a lot of investing in the opportunity zones. Most of their investors are families, so that was pretty interesting. We are using a local bank, Texas Capital Bank, for the debt. And as with all Austin Affordable properties, we will accept voucher holders in this project. And I went through it a little fast, so if y'all have questions, please let me know. I'd be happy to answer any.
I've got some questions. I just want to make sure again, like last time, this is not our deal that we decided not to go for. This is the other one we were talking about, right? That's in that
right.
area.
Right. Yeah, no. The other one that we had discussions on already had properties built on them, so you know there was a question as to relocation and all of this. This is a total different project, and we don't have anything on these. This is just an empty lot right now.
And tell me why. I know you said it's common. We have at least I don't remember us doing too many condos. Why are we doing that here?
It's really it's kind of a financial and a timing thing. It's so that we don't have to go and replat into the one lot into two separate parcels.
Yeah, I remember now. I remember you talking about that. The only thing that worries me is I just want to make sure if we're in the condominium deal, we're not outvoted to do something that we want to do. Is it that kind of a situation?
No, we actually will own both units 100%. We will have the HACA will own the rights 100% of each unit. So okay. Nobody else will come in and vote. Because how we're doing this is HACA owns the land, and then we'll ground lease it to the partnership to actually build the second phase. So because we haven't approved the second phase, we have built-in safety nets so that we don't have to go forward with the second
phase. You've explained this before, but it's – I've slept since then, so that's
whatever makes you, however, I don't mind explaining anything that'll make you more comfortable with our projects.
Okay, thank you.
And I have a question for you, Suzanne, since Chuck brings this up. On the project that we did, a couple of years ago that had this same kind of condominium structure, how has our experience been with that?
It's actually been really good. You know, we are still under construction on that project, which that's another story. You know, city delays and stuff has caused that, but we've really not had any problems with any of that.
Mm-hmm. Remind us again which project that is.
That's the rail on MLK.
Okay.
And good afternoon. This is Bill Walter. This is this deal is a little simpler in that the rail did have other members in the association with various voting rights on this transaction. It will all be controlled by HACA. Just two units, each owned by HACA.
Okay. Thank you, Bill. Are there any other questions for Suzanne?
And I just wanted to add one more thing. Kind of the attractiveness also of the condo regime is that if we do go forward with the phase two, it's going to be the same partners. So it'll still be River City Capital Partners, LDG, Austin Affordable, and then the equity will be the same people. So we'll be dealing with the same whole group.
Okay. Anything else related to Urban East Apartments Phase 1 and Phase 2? Okay, well, we're asked to take five actions on these two developments if the second phase happens. Rather than reading them to you again, they're listed under the item title, and this is Resolution 00171. If there's no further discussion, do I hear a motion that we approve Resolution 00171?
Excuse me, Madam Chair.
I'm sorry. Yes, public. Yes. Is Sonovia, is that you?
That's me, Madam Chair, and I hate to – I know you were in the middle of your groove. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, no, that's fine. No, if we've got public comment and I neglected to ask for that, please speak up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I'm Zenobia Joseph. I was just a little confused because I wasn't familiar with the term condominiumized, and so I was just wondering if it meant that these were condos or if it was just a condo structure, but it kind of sounds like it's the condo structure. But the comment that I really wanted to make is about opportunity zones. I've asked this question before Commissioner's Court as well, and this is nothing against your projects. It's just me from the public trying to understand. I've asked developers, why don't they develop mixed-use development in the opportunity zones? I've watched several videos, and as it relates to opportunity zones in Senator Scott and Senator Cory Booker, there's a video. They were the sponsors of this piece of legislation as part of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017. And the example that they showed was Spartanburg, South Carolina, where there was a food desert, for example. And it's an economic booster is what I envision it to be, where the people in the community get to help redevelop their area. And in Austin, unfortunately, I've not seen that in any of the 21 opportunity zones in Travis County. I know that Brooke Air Force Base is a large-scale example for the state. And so I guess my question, and this is just germane to the topic, not anything against this project, is if the staff could just maybe explain at some point if they consider mixed-use development from the ground up where the people are actually helping in the opportunity zones to redevelop the area, or if it's just strictly standard apartment complexes. I know in the past when I've listened to your meetings, it's usually a greater incentive as it relates to tax credits when they build in the opportunity zones, but I don't really see where there's that much of an incentive, the economic development part of it. I see this project has a coffee bar, but I just think there's so much more that can be done. And so those are my comments. I appreciate you taking them. And that's all I would say. I just, you know, the difference between low-income housing tax credits versus opportunity zones, it just seems like there's so much more that can be done. And thanks again. If you have any questions, I'll gladly answer them.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Any other comments or questions? If not, then do I hear a motion to approve Resolution 00171 related to Urban East Apartments Phase 1 and Phase 2?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Ritchie. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Mary, that was you, right?
Yes.
Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. The motion carries. The next item, then, is item 5 under AAHC's agenda, which relates to actions to be taken on Lexington Hills. I know that Ron will give you more background on this, but Lexington Hills is a property that we currently own, and this would give us – so, Ron, I'll ask for your explanation of this as we begin to take up Resolution 00172.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Gerber's commissioners, staff, guests. Before I talk directly about Lexington in its content now, I just wanted to bring up a couple of points. We hear the term AMI a lot, and you've seen it in almost every resolution and every presentation. And several of the commissioners asked about those rate, you know, what is AMI? What does it equate to in terms of dollars and income levels? And I wanted to point out that if you go to our monthly report, which Suzanne and I put together for you every month, the very last page of the monthly report has the current income limits and the current rent amounts for each family size from families of 1 through 4. So I hope, and we'll try to make that more visible to you, maybe get that more front and center, because I think it's an important understanding when we talk about AMIs that you are aware of who we're serving and what that equates to in terms of rental rate and in terms of income to the families that are renting at certain MFIs or AMIs. So just be aware of that. I wanted to make you that's there in the back, and we'll get that more front and center for you. And secondly, I wanted to thank the board in advance. Just, I know this is a heavy real estate agenda, and I appreciate your patience and your indulgence with all these deals we're presenting. There's a lot of uncertainty out there, and I think what you're seeing is we're trying to lock down a very, very, very favorable interest rates while they're still there. They may be there next year, we don't know, but we know for a fact that they're there now. So you're seeing a quicker push and a little bit more aggressiveness to try and lock down. When we're getting sub 3% rents on refinances and purchases, you know, you always wonder if that's ever going to happen again. So that's one of the main reasons why you're seeing a number of these deals coming up now and versus spreading them out so we can take advantage of these truly wonderful opportunities in the interest rate market.
And Ron, the chart that Ron referenced is on page 19, very much toward the back, under Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. Just a one-pager. It has the AMFIs, the percentages, number of household members, and then the rent limits. So very good, concise one-pager that shows who we serve when we're talking about 40% of AMI or 20% of AMI. So thank you all for including that, and thank you, Ron, for drawing our attention to it.
Thank you. Well, let's talk a little bit about Lexington. Just to refresh your memory, this was a property, one of our early acquisitions. This was purchased in September of 2013. It was financed by Bellwether, our main Fannie Freddie lender. You may wonder why we're doing all this stuff in this resolution about ground leasing and things like that, and why are we going through that again? Well, it's because we didn't do it the first time. Back in 2013, the Fannie Freddie lenders were not fully on board in needing a ground lease type structure at the time. They felt comfortable with the tax exemption as it stood if the property could underwrite with full taxes. So when we bought Lexington, they looked at it and said, well, if you ever lost the tax exemption, could it stand on its own, have to pay taxes? And it certainly could at the time. We got a tremendously good deal back in the day. So with that being said, fast forward, Freddie and Fannie started understanding more about this ground lease where the housing authority owns the land and ground leases it to the partnership. And it gives them one more level of comfort and security that the property under the housing authority would always stay tax exempt because it could revert back to the housing authority if necessary. So what we're doing today in order to refinance this project is we basically have to go back and form the ground lease structure. We did a single purpose entity on this already. We just didn't do the ground lease. So what we're asking you to do in this resolution is to approve the ground lease of the land to HACA ground lease it back to ourselves. We're 100% owner. We don't have partners in this. AHC subsidiary owns 100% of this property. It serves at least 70% of the residents are serving at 60% of AMI and below, with the addition of the rest of them at below 80. It's probably one of our truly most affordable properties that we own in a very, very rapidly changing area just off of Riverside Drive. So we're real proud of this property. But it's in need of some repair. We've got the old siding from 1984 that was put on here. We've got the old energy efficient windows, old AC condensing units. We've done tremendous amount of work on the interiors of these properties. We've put new roofs on the properties. We've fixed structural problems on Riverside Drive. And so now it's time to give this property a facelift. This is one of those that has truly been the property where everyone that's been displaced on Riverside Drive over the last 5 years have come to Lexington Hills to see if there's a unit available. I've attended many, many functions there from prior to pre-COVID, from pool parties to national night out events, and it's an incredible community, a very strong community, and we're real proud of it. We currently owe about $8.2 million on this property. The current interest rate is 5.85%. What we're targeting now is to refinance this. Our targeted rate right now, as it stands today, is about 2.72. So we're achieving a sub 3% less interest rate on this property. We're asking for about I think the resolution calls for not to exceed $15 million in financing. We won't quite pull that amount yet. We're still working through quotes and bids. Our number is probably going to come out closer to about 14,285, maybe 14,3. Of that extra money that we're pulling out, $1 million of that will go into capital reserves. So we have a reserve balance for the future of this property to take care of needs after we go in and take care of the required siding and windows and concrete work and pool repair and things like that to upgrade the property to bring it more in compliance. Railings, we're doing the railings. We're removing a lot of the wood that's out there that's rotted. And this will be a tremendous help. This will not have caused us to raise rents at all. The interest rate reduction will actually be our monthly mortgage payment will be less than what we're paying now based on the 3%, over 3% rate reduction that we're going to achieve. We're probably going to spend just between probably $4.5 and $5 million. It's a very large property, 236 units, many buildings spread out across a lot of property. But we plan on using this, these dollars very, very carefully and very wisely that will go directly into tenant improvements from just the siding and the insulation and the windows alone should save our residents a tremendous amount of electricity, provide more energy efficient. And we'll also be changing out our condensing units to get a higher SEER rating, 15 to 16 SEER rating air conditioners, which should provide, again, additional energy savings for them on that side as well. So these improvements will go directly into the we'll see some direct benefit to our residents on site. We won't be going inside, so we won't have to interfere with any residents' time. We won't have to relocate anyone. We can handle this outside even in COVID. Times that we'll be able to start this. I don't anticipate us starting this until should we approve this refinance. It'll probably be early spring, maybe March, maybe February, depending on how quickly we get all our bids. We're bidding out certain jobs right now and waiting for we have a pretty good feel where we're at, but we're still fine-tuning some things and seeing where we can save costs and where we can do some things better. So with that, again, it's a 236-unit property. I would ask for your approval of Resolution 172 to allow us to go ahead and refinance this property and do the necessary ground lease where HACA will own the land, and we'll go ahead and ground lease it back to the partnership, which we own 100% of.
Thank you, Ron. And as I've noted in the write-up, we do have 23 housing choice vouchers at this property. Are there any questions, comments to Ron about the Lexington Hills refinance and restructuring of the ownership? Great explanation, Ron. Thank you. When I read through this, I called him immediately and said, what are we doing exactly? So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Do I hear a motion for approval of Resolution 00172?
Madam Chair, so moved.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Ritchie. Second?
Second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. The motion passes. The resolution passes. The next is item number 6, which is discussion and approval of Resolution 00173. Again, 4 actions that you are being asked to consider today. It's a 376-unit apartment complex called Broadstone 8100. So you would be facilitating the acquisition, causing AAHC Subsidiary Limited Liability Corporation to own the development, cause the owner to enter into acquisition and development financing, and cause AAHC under the owner to execute any and all documents necessary to allow the consummation of the transaction. With that, Mr. Kowal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. again, Mr. Gerber and commissioners and staff and guests. I want to talk to you a little bit about the Broadstone. I'll call it the Broadstone Apartments instead of going through 8100 every time. This was a very interesting property to me when it was first presented. This is the third of three properties that we're looking to do with our partners, Belveron Corporation. As you're aware, we closed the Tallwood Apartments back in October, and we also closed the Montecito earlier this month in November. Both doing very well. They've come to be really, really good, strong, affordable partners of ours. And I've got to know them now and operate the properties, a couple of them with them now for several months. In fact, they were down here last week. We had a good chance to visit as we looked at the Broadstone again one more time. What intrigued me when they presented this to me is when you look at the property flyer, it says luxury living on a budget. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. This property sits off of Anderson Mill and Palmer Lane. Again, you can see the cranes from Apple right down the street from the site. If you stand on the site, you can see Apple's new construction site being built. This property was built in 2015. It's an absolutely spectacular property. But when you looked at the rents, 100% of the rents were already serving tenants below 80% of area median income. Across the board for families of two, from families of one, two, and a few three, families of three. Belveron proposed a question to me and said, what could we do better? How could we make this more affordable? This is what we want to do. So we came up with the idea that we are going to take a minimum of 10, we will restrict 10% of those units that we have to, that we are required to make affordable at 50% below, 50% of the units below 80. We're going to take 10% of those units across the portfolio, every floor plan, and we're going to self-restrict. We're going to put a restrictive covenant that will guarantee that those units will be rented to no higher than 60% of area median income. And when you look at the numbers, and I've presented a sheet to you on your PowerPoint, it's going to cause some substantial rent reductions across the board. We're going to be dropping rents out there in order to facilitate those restrictive rents, which I think is a fantastic thing. Some as high as $350 a month on the larger units. We're not restricting these only to small units. We're not restricting them to one certain floor plan. It's across the entire board to our largest two-bedroom, two-bath units. So we're extremely excited about their commitment to doing that. The rest of the property, even though we say 50% of the units will serve below 80, 100% of the units, and you'll see on the chart that I gave you, are all well below the 80% current market rents in that area. So, you can see at 80%, one bedrooms are leasing under the 80% scenario at $1,500 a unit. Under two bedroom average is $1,808. We're at $1,174 to $1,300 and $1,624 to $1,700. So the entire property, as beautiful as it is, and I can't wait for you all to see it, is doing some already pretty cool affordable, meeting some affordable demand there, given that it's a very, very, very attractive location. Again, close to Apple, close to the Domain. You've got some major, major employers in that area. And great schools that it pertains to, but it's mostly the hardworking, tech sector, those jobs that funnel into these companies. But we're hoping to also lower that expectation, lower that rent to get a better, a little deeper dive of affordability, and hopefully can provide some good housing for some people that make at 60% and below. So, we're really super excited about this. In addition, as I always tell you, Belveron has always agreed to take all the liability on these projects and take AHCs off any types of claims or any types of liability, which is always a good thing. They're putting up all the capital plus an additional about $1.5 million or so. I can't remember the exact amount yet. We're still fine-tuning that for future capital needs. And again, another 1 year's reserve of mortgage payments of interest and principal to make sure that the property stays whole in case of any kinds of fluctuations over the next 12 months. So they really stepped up their commitment. We're super excited to partner with them. I just hope that you guys will approve this motion, and I'm happy to answer any questions for you. There's some pictures in the PowerPoint that we provided for you of the property itself. And again, there's a chart there that kind of explains some of the rents comparisons and the rent reductions that we're going to be experiencing across the board. And this property will be managed by our management company, Apartment Management Professionals.
Any questions for Ron? Okay, if not, then I would ask for a motion to approve Resolution 00173 and take all the actions that are necessary to consummate the transaction. And this is for Broadstone Apartments, 376 units, located at 8100 Anderson Mill Road. Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Thank you. Carl, second?
Second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All those in favor, aye?
Aye.
Any opposed? And I might note that on the map that we have, which shows our properties, Boston Affordable Properties, the Broadstone is a yellow star on this map.
Ms. Harrington?
Yes.
Sorry to interrupt, but Commissioner Duncan Hall is trying to get your attention.
Okay. Tyra, sorry.
Hey, Andrea, can I ask you, can you minimize the map? That would help us to see each other. So when somebody's trying to raise a hand, the chair can see what's going on.
Thank you, Carl. Yes, I could not see that.
Gotcha.
And Tyra, you're on mute.
Tyra, you're on mute. You're still on mute. You're still on mute. You cut your camera off.
Oh.
Okay, Tyra.
I don't know how to get off.
We can hear you and see you.
Tyra, we can hear you and see you.
Can you hear me?
We can.
From what?
Well,
I was trying to ask a question of Ron an hour ago, but we've already passed on the Broadstone. And remember, Rob, what I was asking about in terms of the AMI, in terms of dollar amount, so that we have a better idea when we're at 60% AMI and what these rents will translate to in terms of dollars. Now your chart for the Broadstone does that very well. I wanted to say that. But for some of these other properties where we're running into the same thing and where we're doing the averaging prior to getting the AMI, it would be nice to know as well what a family of four at AMI 60% is and versus 80%, and what the range of rents would be for those properties. And in the future, if we could get this kind of information, I would feel a lot more comfortable, because my little brain is getting smaller each and every hour, and I can't retain all this stuff in terms of the dollars and cents.
Yes, ma'am. We'll try as we go through when we do additional properties, that we will have an individual chart similar as we did the Broadstone for you. And we'll make sure that chart we provided that's on the back page of your monthly report gets put up to the front, so it's much more visible for you to notice and see, and we'll emphasize that in the future. I apologize for that for you. We'll make sure we do a better job.
And the second question I had about Broadstone, are all of the units now currently occupied 100%?
Yes, ma'am. The Broadstone is currently 97% occupied. It's 376 units. These are no new builds. These are existing acquisitions that we're going to put into affordability in perpetuity.
Okay. And so when do you foresee anyone being able to take advantage of the lowered rent?
So what we use is a first in, first out, first in. So all vacant units currently will immediately fall to the 60% below range. So whatever's empty as from our day of takeover, no unit will be filled unless it's to a resident receiving at 60% below. And until we hit our target rent, we will restrict the balance of those units as they become available as we have move outs. It'll be first in, first out, first in. We're going to hit the 60%. So we're going to do a very big marketing campaign to not only just to the area, but we're going to rely on maybe some of our new voucher out issuances that are now coming out a little bit better because we're not in shortfall. We're hoping to pull some there because of the tremendous amount of the great schools that we have in that area and in the location. So it's going to be our high priority. So that's how we're going to do it. All the empties will be first rented, and they will not be leased unless they're to a 60% rent holder.
Okay. All right, great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good questions, Tara. Thank you. Any other questions for Ron related to Broadstone Apartments?
Commissioner, I would just add that we're really excited about this. This will be, of course, our third deal with Belvoir, and so we'll stop at this point with them and get a chance to really see how this partnership works out. And then we'll be looking to other work with them probably, you know, later next year.
Okay. If there's no further questions, then do I hear a motion that we approve Resolution 7-3 related to the acquisition and actions related to Broadstone 8-100.
So moved.
I so move.
Okay, I hear a motion and a second. Carl and Tyra, any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion passes. The next item is under AAHC's agenda is item number 7, and it is resolution 00175, and it relates to the pathways at Chalmers Courts West. So facilitate the development, lend funds to the partnership, cause AAHC and the general partner to execute documents, to allow consummation of the transaction. And Ann Gass is going to be presenting this this item.
Ann, I don't see you on us connected. Oh, there you are. We can hear you, Ann. We can't hear you through the PC, Ann. You may need to go to the audio settings and turn that on.
How's that?
There you go. Perfect.
Yeah. So, Commissioners, this is an item that you all saw last month. We presented on it in detail about what we were going to be doing for the closing for Chalmers West. And one of the things that we have to do, since this is our last item going through, coming out of public housing, that will close out our public housing stock, is that we have to utilize all public housing restricted funds for this transaction. And when we sent you the resolution last month, we used smaller amounts than we needed. So what you're going to see in these resolutions is bumping up the amount. We found that we had in total just about $7 million in various public housing accounts. This is not just for Chalmers West. This is for Chalmers West and all of the previous RAD closings that we've done. There's some accumulated operating funds that we have to put through this transaction. So these resolutions are identical to what you saw last month, with the exception of the limit of the threshold, the dollar amount that's included in the deal. And those, that money that goes in will come out as proceeds that HACCP will be able to use. And that money will go into a separate account and can be used for affordable housing purposes only. Certainly, we have ways to spend money for affordable housing purposes. So we ask for your approval of this resolution so that we can close on the Chalmers West deal.
Okay.
Any questions?
This is a great problem to have because we, you know, found additional dollars to be able to, you know, put towards the deal and to be able to pull them out of, you know, federal sources that will go to benefit our Chalmers West property. So we hope it's a very easy, straightforward motion.
Yes. And for that reason, I would certainly move approval.
Second.
Thank you, Tara. Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you. Passing of resolution. I'm sorry, did I hear someone? Okay, passage of resolution 00175 related to pathways at Palmer's Courts West. We're getting there. We're getting there, Ann. Okay, the last item on AAHC's agenda relates to our building at 1124 South Interstate 35. So again, actions that you are familiar with: facilitate the acquisition of the improvements, cause AAHC's limited liability company to become the general partner to own the building, and then it calls AAHC or the owner to execute any other documents necessary to allow the consummation of the transaction. Mr. Kowal.
Thank you once again, Madam Chair. We're bringing this item back to you from last month, and it's again asking you to approve the change in the ownership name of our building from the Housing Authority of the City of Austin over to a single-purpose entity owned 100% by AAHC. And I know we tabled this because we had some concerns or some questions based on liability and how this affects, you know, HACCP versus a liability company. We've got two fantastic attorneys on the phone. Bill Walter's on the line, and I know Wilson is on the line as well. They both had some input into this over the last 30 days, and we're happy to share their comments. If you all would like to hear from either or ask questions, I don't want to play attorney, so I would let them do that. What I would like to add, though, is one simple comment. As we go all through these real estate deals, you see that we're doing a ground lease, and we have a single purpose entity, and the land is leased. This is purely because the lending community, this is the approved structure for us to get financing. They want a single purpose entity in order to facilitate their requirement. It's kind of a confusing thing why they do that. This is what they do. It puts us into a more affordable lending program when we do that as well. There's all kinds of quirky things about it, but it is the preferred structure. There's some questions about lending to a housing authority that doesn't meet HUD's guidelines of maybe an energy performance contract or something like that. So they shy away from lending to housing authorities as well. So I believe this is the right move. It's something that we've done and discussed, you know, many times over the years. Through both councils, through Jim Eubank, and now with Wilson, and also with Bill and Barry. So I'll defer to them if you guys have any questions or want to further dig into that subject as well. If not, I'm happy to answer any other questions pertaining to the financing.
Ron, if Bill could hit the issues that Commissioner Bailey raised last time concerning liability exposure.
Let me step in here. I'm okay now. I told Ron and Mike that if the staff says this is what normally is done in real estate transactions, And if we need it, we need that kind of a corporate setup, or or however you want to put it, business, entity to get funding. I'm all right with that. I have a kind of underlying concern that as we have moved further and further away from being a public housing authority to getting involved in real estate development, I worry that our governmental immunity, at some point in time, some smart lawyer is going to come in and say, yeah, you were a government entity when you provided public housing, but now you do all kinds of real estate things that has nothing to do with the government. That's what my concern is, what my concern has been for the past several years. I'm okay with this particular deal. Again, if Ron's our expert, he says it's okay. I'm okay. Ron's never directed us in the wrong direction. So lawyers, Bill and Wilson, that's just my it's just a lawyerly concern from a lawyer who doesn't do real estate development. But I've been involved in government law almost all of my career, and I do worry about that liability. We have some big tort at one of these projects, and they sue us, and we throw up governmental immunity. They'll say, well, let's just look and see whether you're still a government or not.
Right. Commissioner Bailey, this is Wilson Stoker. After last month, I took a look at it. Simply, I'm not a real estate attorney either. So I looked at this transaction in particular. This is just a typical lending transaction for commercial real estate that lenders apparently require to insulate themselves in the transaction, so they're able to be at the top of the line for the lending transaction. But then I looked at, our liability is still tied to the Texas government code, and I'm happy to go into it offline with you a little deeper, but the body of law connected to that has not changed, and that's why AAHC was set up originally like this, because the wholly owned subsidiary maintains that immunity. I reached out to Bill Walter to talk about this transaction. I talked to Jim Eubank as well about his prior discussions about this. And I did research on it, and I don't see how that's changed right now. But I do understand the concern of evolving into a private, a private entity here as opposed to a governmental entity, but there's no case law that addresses that yet or changes our ability to make that immunity available to us. And we can't contract out of it either. So I haven't found anything that creates, we haven't created a liability by entering any of these transactions.
Well, I know that there's probably, we've gotten into the private public realm in all kinds of deals for the last 20 or 30 years. I would guess there's some case law involving other government joint programs where you have a private public business setup.
That's right.
So I suspect there is some law on that.
That's right, which supports our maintaining the immunity.
Okay. Bill, you can cut me off if you think I'm just wandering off into the wilderness, but if the case law is moving in that direction, then that makes me feel better.
Yeah, so I think to echo Wilson's comments, I think our goal with this was, one, to allow for a single-purpose entity to be the borrower, as Ron alluded to, which is pretty much the common requirement on most lenders, while at the same time maintaining the protections for the housing authority that we would on any of our housing developments. So having HACA remain as the owner and then creating a shell entity, which shouldn't be pierced for any reason absent fraud, and then, of course, isolating HACA itself from the lending. So much like the housing developments themselves, you know, we don't feel that this provides any additional liability to HACA or AHC for that matter.
Okay. I'd already pulled in my horns on this deal, but my concern remained, and that helps. Thanks.
Yes, sir.
So, Bill and Wilson, this is Carl. On most of our transactions, if not all of them, there is some component of federal dollars involved, whether it's tax credits, although tax credits are not dollars, but there are allocations. That's government. All the stuff we're doing related to RAD is, in a sense, at the behest of HUD. You kind of have an option. You can either take the money and do this, or you can stay behind and you can be public housing if you want to, but you're going to be on your own because we're moving away from that model, but we're still giving you federal dollars that are appropriated by Congress. So there's still that nexus woven into being a governmental entity because we're getting governmental dollars and we're having to abide by governmental regulation. Would that kind of bolster our case?
I think it does too. And 392 is pretty helpful also, given that, you know, specifically in the statute governing the housing authority, the provision of affordable housing is a governmental function. And so, obviously, on all these deals, we make sure that there is an affordability component so that we're always maintaining that governmental function of providing that housing.
Okay. Chuck, I'm not sure.
Let me just throw this one out while the lawyers are talking, Carl. Assuming one of our good friends in Houston, big plaintiff lawyer in Houston or Beaumont, they get hired by somebody who is working at one of our new projects that's a joint project, a joint private public funding, and an industrial and the set aside workers' comp for a minute, and a guy gets injured, falling into a swimming pool, and becomes a paraplegic. I cannot imagine that they wouldn't sue us, as well as the private folks. I mean, we're a partner in the partnerships, and it doesn't make any difference whether we're in the housing business with federal money or not. We're acting as developers. But if what Wilson and Bill are saying is that the case law seems to say we're still protected, then I'm okay. But I guarantee you, it just worries me that we have become such a different creature because as y'all have pounded into my head for the past 20 years, we had to. But because we had to doesn't mean we automatically keep that liability protection. So that's, you know, you're going to hear from me every year or so about this. And as long as our officer and director insurance paid up in full and we got lawyers telling us we've got protections, then I'm okay.
So I have a question. So should we go to TLR and find a way to get additional tort reform immunity?
Oh, I'm sure they'd probably jump right in there with us. And look here, look who's joining us, the housing authorities. Yeah.
We're going to have a pretty expansive agenda,
we'll get Dick Weekly to come over and testify in front of one of our hearings.
Well, actually, last session they tried to get into a little bit more of social justice, which was surprising, but to get in some of the grand jury stuff to try to balance it out a little bit. I was surprised that they did get behind several bills introduced by Ron Reynolds and others. And so, I'm being facetious, but at the same time, I do know they have a pretty expansive agenda, and they at least would be open to a conversation if we really wanted to pursue it.
Yeah, I think that's premature, but it's something to keep in my back pocket.
Okay.
All righty.
I'm just trying to make sure you're happy.
Thank you all.
I'm happy. Happy as a clam.
I think it was a really good discussion. Thank you. And I think, Chuck, we always appreciate when you bring up these issues because we get more in depth and we understand more. So thank you. And thanks to staff for working with commissioners over this last 30 days to get us comfortable.
Thanks, Wilson. Bill, I appreciate you. You're thinking on it.
Yes, sir. Likewise.
Okay, if there's no more discussion, then I will ask for a motion to approve Resolution 00174 to take necessary actions for our office at 1124 South Interstate 35. Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
I so moved.
And the second, Mary, thank you. Any further discussion? If not, vote to approve.
Aye.
Okay. Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay. And if there is no other business, my book shows that that is the last of the business for Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. Is that correct, Mr. Gerber?
Yes, ma'am. We can close this agenda.
We will close then the agenda of the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation at 2:22 on November the 19th. And thank you all very much. And thanks to staff. I have an idea of how much work goes in doing what you all do to prepare these transactions for our review, and we appreciate it very much. So, Chairman, yes.
We'll need a motion to adjourn that.
Oh.
So moved.
Oh, okay. Second?
I moved to adjourn.
Okay, thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye?
Aye.
Okay. Any opposed? Thank you, Nydia. With that, Mr. Chairman, I think it's back to you.
Mr. Chairman, we've got seven items to do, and I need about 15 minutes for that executive session. So, I would suggest if you've got the patience to do it, because I want to save a couple items for last. Let's do the agenda in reverse order. So starting at item 13, we'll just pick up all the items that we just approved on the other two agendas. So item 13 is resolution number 2682, approving by the Board of Commissioners of HACA to take actions necessary to ground lease and transfer the improvements here at the HACA Central Building to AHC HACA Central LLC.
I so move.
There's a motion by Commissioner Duncan Hall. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Commissioner Apostolo. Is there any discussion? Is there any member for the general public who would like to speak on this item? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. We go to item number 12, which is approval of resolution number 2683 regarding the pathways at Chalmers Courts West. The chair will entertain a motion to approve that item.
So moved.
I move.
I so move.
All right. There's a motion by Commissioner Carrington, seconded by Commissioner Apostolo. Is there anyone from the general public who would like to speak on this item? Hearing none. Any further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. We'll go to item number 11, which is approval of resolution number 2681, which is to approve the action taken on Broadstone Apartments development. The chair will entertain a motion to approve this item.
So moved.
Motion by Commissioner Bailey, seconded by Commissioner Apostolo. Discussion, is there any member of the general public that would like to address this issue? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries, and we'll go to item number 10, which is resolution number 2680, approval of the action previously taken on Lexington Hills Apartment. Is there a motion to approve this item?
So moved.
Motion by Commissioner Bailey, seconded by Commissioner Apostolo. discussion. Is there any member of the general public that would like to make a comment before we take final action? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. We'll go to item number 9, which is approval of resolution number 2679 regarding their action to approve the previous action taken on Urban East Apartments Phase 1. Is there a motion to approve item number number 9, resolution number 2679?
I so move.
Motion by Commissioner Costello, seconded by Commissioner Duncan Hall. Discussion. Is there any member from the general public that would like to speak on this item? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. All right, Mr. Gerber, so what does that bring us to now?
Mr. Chair, we'd like to go up to number 6, which is renewal of the Boys and Girls Clubs contract for comprehensive youth development programs.
All right.
Leilani, are you or presenting? Or Barbara?
I'm here.
Pilar, I'm sorry. You need to move very quickly on this, Pilar. Go ahead.
Yeah. Good afternoon, commissioners and staff. I'm presenting resolution number 2677, which is a recommendation from staff to renew the contract with the Boys and Girls Club of the Austin area for an amount of $114,000. It is the same amount that we had before, and it is been able to renew it for 1 year and able to extend it for 5 additional years. The Boys and Girls Club has been a partner for a long time, providing dropout prevention programs for our children at several of our sites. This particular contract is to provide services at Chalmers Courts in Meadowbrook. The third property that they're currently serving is BTW, but it's not part of this contract. This is to operate 2 Boys and Girls Clubs from Monday through Friday, from 2:30 to 7, and that is for after-school programming. Currently, they are operating from 7:30 to 5:30 due to, due to COVID. But as soon as AISD allows, as soon as more kids are going to AISD and less staying at home, then they will resort back to these hours, which are for after-school programming. They also provide programming from 7:30 to 5:30 on school holidays and during the spring and summer breaks. And there's about 32 different programs that they provide. We are asking for approval to approve the Boys and Girls Club of the Austin area contract with us for $114,000.
So, Pilar, let me just ask one quick question for clarification. So when you say they are operating from 7:30, that's 7:30 a.m. in the morning until 5:30 p.m. in the afternoon?
Barbara, right now, what time are they providing services?
Right now, they have switched to the after-school model since AISD is serving over 75%, you know, they're open for full business. So by moving to after school, they can serve more kids than if they stay in the full day model when many children are actually attending in-person school. That switch has happened around November 16th.
So they're switching beginning today. As of last week, they switched to this week, as of Monday, they switched to the after-school model, and before was the full-day model.
Yes.
Correct.
And their contract is for after-school. The only reason they did the daily model was because of COVID.
They really stepped up in a lot of different ways, and really the contract, I wish I could say it was going to have the clear outcomes that we might like to see.
Ms. Sanchez, Ms. Lynn Vegas, or Ms. Jackson. Chair will entertain a motion.
Question for.
Hold on for a second. I'm having problems. Hold on for a second. I'm having problems with my computer. I see you. I'm just trying to get.
Oh, okay.
Because my internet is, for whatever reason, is about to drop. Okay, Tara, go ahead. You got a question or comment you wanted to make?
Yes. I noticed that the negotiated terms on page 10 through 12 offer the greatest specificity about what the Boys and Girls Club is being held accountable for. And I note that you're asking that they served no fewer than 60 resident youth at Chalmers and 90 at Meadowbrook Club for a total of 150 unduplicated. Can you tell me what percent of this 150 represents of our student population at these two sites?
I can answer that question. At Meadowbrook, there are about 200 school-aged children, but the truth is that the older students don't really participate in the Boys and Girls Club the same way the elementary and middle school students do. So they have about 85% of the eligible youth in that age group enrolled in the club. So they really serve, when they're open and fully enrolled, they really serve the majority of the kids there. And that is partly due to the fact that we have all the space in the new building. Over at Chalmers, mm-hmm. there are less children, but we're also able to serve less children because we have less space, even when we don't have COVID restrictions. And I'll just note that on there it says when COVID's happening, they can serve much, they need to serve many less children. So I think at Meadowbrook we're around 25 to up to 50 max if they use more space there. And at Chalmers it's no more than 25 in the space that we have currently. Of course, when Chalmers West gets built, we'll have a much bigger space there and we'll be able to serve a greater percentage of the students. I think that at Chalmers, we have school-age children a little over 100, like 110 or 120 school-age mm-hmm. children. So there is greater need there. And students come over from Santa Rita as well to participate in the Boys and Girls Club. So we certainly could serve more if we had more space.
Okay. So there is unmet need.
Yes.
Okay.
Mostly at Chalmers.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions?
I would just say on this contract and on the CIS contract that you all are going to see at some point, this year has thrown both relationships into a very different kind of footing. And different organizations, these two organizations and Creative Action and others are really stepping up in a variety of different ways. And so the data is not going to be, this is really going to be an anomalous kind of year. And so just ask you all to bear with us on that. But Barbara, you feel confident and Lilani, you feel confident that the work and the delivery of what we're getting from Boys and Girls Clubs is solid, effective for our students, and that they're really trying hard to help.
Yeah, I'll take that question. So definitely, Mike, I think the one of the major advantages that we have with the Boys and Girls Club of the Austin area is they were one of the few essential agencies dealing with youth development that never closed throughout the entire pandemic. So even on a competitive basis, they definitely do know all the ins and outs of the CDC and all the guidelines from the national to state to the local level. And so actually it's the reverse way. When we started the Hawker at-home learning program to deal with the coronavirus slides, we learned much from their model that we brought over to the community rooms serving DTW, Chalmers, and Meadowbrook. And so I would say that because of the space, if it weren't for the space, they are serving a very high quality, and I would also commend their flexibility and being able to pivot at a moment's notice. And I think that's something that other youth development programs might not be able to do. Sometimes in less than 24 hours, we've been able to say there's an ordinance from the mayor saying that we cannot do in-house learning, and they will pivot to this program called Club to Go, where they will assemble packages and distribute the distance learning outside of the properties. So there are several benefits, definitely, and of course the educational piece, where they have also pivoted a lot of their curriculum, whether through YouTube or online, and they have provided digital devices to our kids. So the quick answer is yes, and we can go deeper into that, but that, I would definitely say that it has been very effective so far. Thank you.
Very good.
So, Commissioners, we would ask for approval of Resolution Number 2677 for Comprehensive Youth Development Club's contract award to Boys and Girls Clubs.
I move approval.
All right. There's a motion by Commissioner Duncan-Hall, seconded by Commissioner Apostolo. Discussion. Is there any member from the general public who would like to speak on this issue? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries.
Mr. Chair, we're going to go up to item number 5, and this will be, I think, our last item. The others are just general updates, and we'll forego those for this board meeting. We're going to take up Resolution 2676, approving the Low-Income Housing Department property budgets for calendar year 2021. In a nutshell, as you know, we have, with the conversion to RAD, needed to, we are going off of the HUD-determined fiscal year end, which has been because of the way HUD wanted public housing authorities to, you know, submit documents to them. They went and they assigned housing authorities to different fiscal years. So a quarter of the agencies submit at the end of March, a quarter of the agencies submit at the end of June, a quarter submit at the end of September, and a quarter submit at the end of December. It evens out their workflow. But from a in the real world, things work on a calendar year. And so we're converting because we're going to the real world of RAD and the real world of finance that everyone else is engaged in, and converting to the calendar year. And so Michael Roth is going to quickly summarize these budgets, much of which you've seen before, and a couple of outlying factors, and then we'll seek your approval. Michael?
Yes. Good afternoon, commissioners, staff, and guests. I'm Michael Roth, and Director of Housing Operations for our Low-Income Housing Department. And as Mike just summarized, we're bringing to you the calendar year 2021 budgets for all 16 of our project-based rental assistance properties. These budgets reflect exactly what we expected to see when we made the conversion to RAD, that some of our larger properties were doing very, very well, and some of the challenges for our smaller properties. But overall, our portfolio is very strong and functionally doing very, very well. We see that while the revenues have increased about 2%, which is in keeping with the operating cost of adjustment factors that we get from HUD, our expenses have increased about 3%, which is exactly what the pro formas had laid out when we were making this conversion process. So overall, the properties still cash flow. Overall, the properties are meeting the debt service ratios coverages, as well as meeting all of our debt service that we have on all of our properties. And overall, we have a plan that property management and maintenance staff feels very, very confident is a good plan to be able to maintain our properties in a strong position as we move forward for the coming calendar year of 2021. So they recommend that the board approve these budgets, and I'd be happy to entertain any questions you may have.
Michael, the color coding, red states and blue states? Any significance in the color coding?
No, there was no significance at all in the color coding, what was printed and presented to you. I think it was just a way to highlight and be able to see clearly what was there on the page. There's no significance in that sense.
I'm sorry for that.
No, it's okay.
I apologize.
I wasn't following and tracking your question at first, so I apologize for that.
Okay. Okay.
I was spot on that, Tyra. I picked up on it real quick.
But you didn't react in any positive manner.
Well, I was chuckling in the background.
Oh, okay. Thank you. All right.
Are there any other questions?
Well, maybe a little bit of a serious question. A lot of this stuff is very detailed. Is there anything that stood out for you that would be worrisome, or anything that we should be looking at as a very high positive, or, you know, something that might need our attention?
I think what I would stress all along is the numbers, when you look at individual properties, and some of the properties are really close in terms of revenue versus cash flow, or revenue versus expenses. However, mm-hmm. what's built into the revenue is a 3.5% vacancy loss, which we do not operate our properties at 3.5% vacancy. We operate our properties at about 1.5% vacancy or less. Even in the worst case year, which is 2020 of COVID-19, where we were leaving vacancy unit intentionally vacant for a while, we're not even going to be anywhere close to that. We're going to be around 1.8% by the end of this year. Normally, we're at around 1.3. That adds about an additional $300,000 worth of revenue over and above what you see in this budget, which I think, to me, gives a lot of comfort knowing that even in a worst case scenario where something unexpected can occur, there's already mm-hmm. stuff built in here where we will have money to be able to pay for those expenses.
That's a very good point. Thank you.
Commissioner, if I could ask our CFO if there's anything she would chime in. Of course, she steered some of these budgets for quite some time. Anne, are you seeing anything that commissioners should be concerned about, or would you comment just generally on what you're seeing?
No, I mean, I really think that that each year, I through RAT, even, you know, before I was in this role as interim CFO, through RAT, I had a lot of involvement in working with Michael on these budgets. And I think that RAT presented different challenges for us, adding debt, having to monitor debt service coverage. And I think that over the last 4 years since we converted to RAT, so I guess this is the third iteration of RAT budgets that we've done for these properties, Michael and his team have really continued to perfect the process. And I feel this year that the process that Michael's gone through with involving the staff and the CDs and a process has been a very, very effective. We have a lot of confidence in these budgets. Isra Elkazine and Carlton Greenhaw both worked very hard with Michael to make at all the numbers they need. So we're feeling really good about it.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioners, we would ask for your approval of resolution number 2676, approving the low income housing department's property budgets for calendar year 2021.
So moved.
Submission by Commissioner Duncan Hull, seconded by Commissioner Apostolo. Is there a discussion? Is there anybody from the general public that would like to comment on resolution number 2676? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries.
Thank you. And I just so you all sort of again see the bigger picture on the whole thing, you know, this set of budgets and this conversion of fiscal years is, you know, one more part of just sort of closing the door on, you know, running multiple programs. And getting to doing one thing really efficiently, the running of the properties with one set of budgets, with one computer system. So there's a lot of conversions happening. But this is, you know, this is a big reorg and consolidation, if you will, and it's reflected in the budget process and the budget that you see and is part and parcel of what RAD was intended to do. So I hope you all feel good about that. This is a major part of it seems like a small action that you just took, but in the approval again of Chalmers West, that's the 17th and a half property that we had to convert to RADs. That's the last public housing asset to convert, so we're done, and all of our properties now will be PBRA properties because of the action you took today. The reason we went back to revisit Chalmers West is that we found additional money from public housing that we found as we scavenged throughout the budgets and different accounts, and we dumped it all into Chalmers Courts West. And so, you know, that's what you approved earlier. So that's closing up and, you know, creating a dumping ground for any remaining resources that goes into, you know, that asset. And then what you just passed was, again, budgets that have a lot to do with, you know, systems and controls and other process things. So it doesn't feel like it, but I hope we connected the dots that you've made some really momentous decisions that made an awful lot of, I mean, just look at the smile on Ann's face right there. Yeah, that just says it all.
Yeah.
And Michael's too. So thank you all very much. Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence, we'll hold off on the updates on the coronavirus. There's always good things happening under item four, and I'd encourage you all to read them. It's just the top five things we're doing each month during the pandemic. And then we'll update you on items seven and eight. I'm sorry, on item eight, a broader overview of AHC's portfolio at a future meeting. But I would like to ask if we could use these remaining 15 minutes to go into executive session.
Yes.
All right.
Bye. Thank you all.
Thanks, team. And Andrea is going to stay on, and but she will be muting herself, and we'll just I'll correspond with her to let you know when we can go back into public session.
Give me a few minutes, Mike, to make it the session ready for executive session.
Thank you very much. Mr. Gary,
this conference will now be recorded.
And so in executive session, we have discussed personnel-related matters, and the chair will entertain a motion to approve awarding the staff $1,000 bonus for the holiday season, as well as the development of a recruitment and retention fund not to exceed $150,000. The policies surrounding that will be vetted out by Commissioner Duncan Hall and Commissioner Carrington, who comprise an personnel evaluation committee. They will vet it out, develop a policy that will be brought back before the board so the board can formally adopt it. And with that, the chair will entertain a motion to approve those items that was discussed and that I just outlined in the executive session.
So moved.
Seconded by Commissioner Carrington. Is there any further discussion? Is anyone from the general public that has anything to say? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. With that, the chair will entertain a motion to adjourn the Housing Authority of the City of Austin Board of Commissioners meeting.
So moved.
There's a motion made by Commissioner Carrington, seconded by Commissioner Apostolo. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. And we're adjourned at 3:27 on Thursday, November 19th. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.